This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum and kia ora Dunedin.
You are tuned into Chit Chat with Pav, brought to you by the Pakistani Association of Otago.
This is your space for culture, stories and good conversation, straight from our community to yours.
Assalamu alaikum and kia ora everyone to another episode of Chit Chat with Pakistan on ORFM. When we visit a doctor or have a blood test, we usually thank the doctor or the nurse. But have you ever wondered who works behind the scenes to make sure that the test results are accurate? The truth is that every diagnosis, every treatment plan, and often every single life-saving decision depends on the work of highly skilled medical laboratory scientists. Our guest today is someone who has dedicated more than 15 years to that profession. His journey has taken him from working in some of Pakistan's leading hospitals and diagnostics labs to now conducting cutting-edge research at University of Otago. Along the way, he has managed the lab of a 500-bed teaching hospital, published internationally in peer-reviewed recognized journals, taught at universities, and is now exploring how stem cells and cardiac diagnosis could help transform the future of heart disease and treatment. Science often happens quietly behind lab doors or closed doors, but its impact is felt by millions of people every day. Today, we'll pull back the curtain and learn about the fascinating world of medical laboratory science, the future of regenerative medicine, and the inspiring personal journey that brought our guest from Pakistan to New Zealand. Please join me in inviting Mr. Areeb Iqbal. Areeb, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Walaikum salam. First of all, I'm really thankful to you for inviting me here. And you guys are really doing a fabulous job supporting the wider community. And it is really amazing to see how much this show is watched and valued both by Pakistani community and everyone else.
Thank you. Thank you, Areeb. Now, Areeb, your profession is very impressive. And I was looking at the work which you are doing, the stem cells and the heart disease. Oh, my God. It all looks very fascinating and feels like when I was reading your work, I felt like I'm watching a movie, maybe Jason Bourne or Mission Impossible movie yeah. where somebody is doing some very important work and, you know, scientists are, you know, behind the scene working in the labs where all they have screens and all the stuff. But before we dig into that, first, I would like to ask who Areeb is and how was your childhood? Was it your journey since the beginning? Hey, I want to be a science guy. I imagine it mostly in Pakistan, because I also grew up in Pakistan, The first dream is I want to be a pilot. You know, every boy's dream is I want to be a pilot. Want to, you know, fly fighter jets and all this stuff. Yeah. What was your dream? How was Areeb when he was a kid?
Oh, thanks for giving all this background, actually. Yeah, it's really great, actually. We will discuss more about my research, and then I will tell you that it's really fabulous, actually, and really mind-blowing. When I still reminded when I landed first time in Dunedin, and I met my supervisor. So when my supervisor said to me that this is a project, would you be love to work on this project? And the first thing come from my facial expression is just wow, actually. Yeah, so that really is so impressive working with the stem cell and other stuff. We will be discussing this later. And yeah, you're right, actually. If I still remind, I did not have any dream of becoming that much great, actually. I maybe just become a scientist even at that time. And I was quite curious. The one thing that I was quite curious and I was really hardworking, but the one thing I really hate is memorizing the things. I was really bad at memorizing the things.
Oh, yeah, I remember that in Pakistan.
So it's a big cramming. I can't actually remind all the paragraph and other stuff. That was actually the one of the thing that I linked the connections and other stuff. But I was quite extrovert. And I love spending time with my friends and with my siblings to play some outdoor activities and a lot of indoor video games and other stuff. But yeah, it was a good, healthy childhood that I spent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think what you're trying to say is you're more of a concept guy rather than a, you know, this is the word, I have to learn it. This is the definition, I have to learn it exactly as is. You were sort of a person, hey, what is the meaning of this definition? What it means, you know, and once you know the meaning, you sort of, it sticks with you for the whole life?
You are absolutely right, actually. When I was young, I was really feel bad about this thing that why can't I cram even a single definition? And my rest of my, and other guys are very good at doing it. And my friend, even my sister was good at cramming or even memorizing the whole page or the whole paragraph or even the whole essay. And that was really bad at that time, which I feel, but I realize that how it helped me to become, to navigate different paths in the lives and to try different things in the life. That was actually one of the things.
Yeah. I think it would be difficult for our Kiwi listeners to understand, but in Pakistan, even for my kids are learning over here, studying over here. All of my kids have started from year one or even before year one. But they don't memorize stuff. They just say, they just understand. But it's quite opposite in Pakistan. Whatever is written, you have to sort of memorize, and we have tests and everything. And teachers usually, you know, judge you on what you've written. not they don't judge you on what the concept is. They judge you on if it's exactly as is. All right. So we were talking before, and you were saying, hey, before even being a scientist, you were interested in maths and physics. So tell us more about that.
That actually comes with the same story because of the connections and building the linkages. Because, again, there is a less cramming in math, actually. You have to solve the problems with the step-wise, actually. And I think I feel that much more easy for me because of the thing. But still, I was not interested in science initially. So the physics actually attracts me a lot. But
So you were more of a physics and maths guy.
Yeah, I love that things.
Turned out to be a medical scientist.
I turned out to be the microbiologist. Yeah. I love the how the space works, how the spaceships work and other stuff. But I turned up to be the microbiology guy who under the microscope, they just work on the smallest particle in the world, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's a shift. It's a 180-degree shift.
Yeah. And I think because you're a numbers guy, in some way, shape, or form, you are sort of calculated and methodology. I mean, your methodology sort of very calculated. Hey, how many minutes, how many things, how many things I have to add into, you know, my microbiology project?
My experiments. That is actually, is actually good, actually, to learn the mathematics.
So, and you also explained to me, not explain, we were having chit chat. So, about your family being involved in medical?
Yeah, my father did his master's way back in 70s. And it was I think the first guy in the whole city who did this master's. And he was really interested to do PhD, to pursue the PhD at that time. But he realized that the need of the time at that time was a diagnostic lab, because there was no renowned lab, or there was no good services available for a community. And then he realized to start a diagnostic lab with the X-rays and blood tests and other facilities. Within no time it was expanded, and a lot of we have to recruit a lot of people and also the family members as well. So it was just become like a family business. So I have just when I grow up, obviously I grow up in a lab with the instruments all the way and all the testing going on. So the discussions in the home going on about the different tests and services and different diseases. So it was like learning from my childhood, actually.
So unconsciously you were getting all the science in your brain, talking to your dad, talking to your family members and everyone. It's good. So, you know, how they say that the child grows up and you never know what the child is learning. So I guess the environment plays a big part in what they become.
Exactly.
All right. So one thing, you also mentioned that you sort of lost your father when you were very young. I must say that is something which no child should ever go through. But looking back, there would be kids who are in a similar position as you are. And how did you experience, how did sort of that experience shape you as a person? How did, so if somebody is in your position, some kid is in your position, what would you say to them that how, what you learn in your life, how the lessons that you can transfer to the sort of young kids?
Yeah, it was really challenging actually because of the importance of parents in your in the pillars of the family. It was challenging, no doubt. But at the same time, it learned me the resilience and the perseverance, and also it gave me some independence as well. So I have to make decision making as well. But really, that was a hard time, and my mother did an extraordinary job in doing that. And the good thing that reflects one of the positive factor of our society, the strong joint system as well. So I lived in a strong joint system with extended family. So that helped me to go through all the things. But that was challenging, and that gave me to how to make the decision making and teach me the resilience actually. And yeah, so it was...
So I guess you had your final support, your family and your mother played a big role in what you are. Are you the oldest sibling or the youngest?
Yeah, I am the eldest one, actually. I have one brother and one sister, actually.
Oh, yeah. As being the oldest one, it also comes with, you know, you are sort of the leader.
Responsibilities. Yeah, it's a responsibility.
You certainly become the big one of the house.
Exactly.
And I guess your siblings would have been shielded from... because you were the one who were experiencing it for the first time, and you would have wanted to shield your other brothers and sisters.
Yeah, being eldest, that gave me actually the more, I have to be on a driving seat sometime, I have to make the decisions. But obviously they will be passing through the same phase actually, because we had just a 1 year gap in my siblings. So that was just, I was also young actually, relatively to them. But but still, even today, there are moments when I wish I could sit down with my father and over a cup of coffee and tell him about my life and hear about things. So although I learned from that, I get through that experience, but still there is a gap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that need to be.
I guess, you know, learning on the go, you learn as you do things. And growing up, which city in Pakistan did you grow up?
I was in the Lahore, actually.
Oh, you were in Lahore.
The capital of Punjab.
The capital of Punjab. One of the biggest cities in Pakistan.
One of the popular cities, exactly.
And one of the cities with the best food.
Best food, and especially the breakfast.
The breakfast. I think the only thing, the one thing which I miss most after moving away from Pakistan is the food, and I think I'll keep on missing that. You can never get the taste.
And especially the late night, drive your car and just have a food.
And I think in Pakistan, most of our, when friends come over and when you go over to your cousin's place or everyone, hey, what are we doing? Let's go and get something. That's a typical
thing.
Have a biryani or let's go. That's a typical thing in Pakistan to go out and, you know, and eat out. Yeah. That's the most.
If you are happy, let's go out to celebrate it. And if you are need some sport, if you have some failure, don't worry. Let's go for a food, man. You will be fine, actually.
That's so true. I mean, it's fascinating how cultures are different from each other. In Pakistan, food is your sort of life revolves around the food. So growing up in Lahore, which school you went to in Lahore?
I went to the Cathedral School.
It was a Christian school.
Yeah, Cathedral School in the Church Street Road.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it was a good. So even when I was young, I was exposed to these multicultural things. So there are a lot of so it was a Christian school, and you know, in Lahore there was a less Christian schools. So we participated in the Christmas and the Easter celebrations, and we participated. So it was there where we learned grown up with the multicultural things there. So that was really helpful for me here as well. So I have a lot of friends there from the my teachers and other stuff.
One thing not many people know. People think of Pakistan as a country with predominantly Muslim population. Yeah. That is true.
Yeah.
But it's a mixed bag. There are
heaps of.
I also grew up studying in a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have principal. We had father. So
usually
people have principals. We had father.
Yeah. Same thing.
Who was very strict, I must say.
Disciplined. Yeah, really.
Typical Pakistani father. So. And the thing is, I remember growing up, we used to celebrate Christmas, we used to celebrate Easter, and then morning prayers and all that stuff.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
And I was talking to one of my kindergarten teacher, she used to teach me in year three, and we connected on Facebook, and I still remember her class. And I was talking to her. It was fascinating, and she was very proud that what I've become today. Mm-hmm. And it just feels good when your teachers
appreciate you.
So. So you're schooling, and then you went to I
went to the Crescent School. But you're right, actually. I will just go to add something to that. I do have many of my friends that are actually the Christians.
Yes.
And I have a very good connections with them. And even when I was the manager of one of the hospital, so I have the colleagues that are Christian. He went to the Thailand, and he sent my birthday cake when I was in Pakistan.
Oh, wow.
So it was really fabulous. So there's a lot of connections and a lot of things there.
Nice gesture.
I went to the Crescent School. Then after that, I went to Crescent College.
Okay.
And I spent 2 years off there in my Crescent College. And and then I just go for my...
And then you university?
I did my graduation from the Sheikh Zayed Hospital University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because of my family background.
It's very hard to get into that university. How did you get it?
The
merit is very high for that.
Yeah, it was really high. But I was a good student. Although I don't like the memorizing the thing, but I was always a good student. I might not be in top three students, but I was never been in the last 10 students as well. So I was a 6-7.
Top quarter.
I got admission. I was lucky. But I was going to relate here a good memorable incident that happened to me. My name is Arib, but it's quite uncommon in Pakistan to have the name in Arib. So most of the girls' name have Ariba.
We have an A at the end.
So most it's an Ariba. It's not Arib. So when the list was when they just display the list of the successful candidates who that got admission in the Sheikh Zayed Hospital. So at that time they used to display the separate list, the girls' list and the boys' list. So my name was there in the girl list. So I was really worried. I just go through the list multiple times and I just went to the office and asked them that how can I fail actually? But then I realized that they somehow put the A on my name and that's why it's on the other list.
The person who would have been making a list and said, "Oh, Arib, there's no Arib, there's Ariba. Let me put Ariba. A by myself."
It's happened multiple times with me actually. It's not difficult if you have some unique names actually.
Same goes for the name Naseem. It's mostly a girl's name, but there are some boys. I mean, I had a friend who was Naseem.
Mm-hmm,
same goes for Nayyar. I have a friend who is Nayyar. He's the only friend. I've seen Nayyar as girls.
I have my friend name was Nayyar as well.
Mostly they are Nayyara.
Nayyara, there was a Nayyara.
Yeah,
so it was a confusion I faced.
So, And then from Punjab, from Sheikh Zayed, you did, and then you did your MSc research. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in Sheikh Zayed Hospital, the Sheikh Zayed University was actually linked with one of the biggest renowned hospitals, Sheikh Zayed Hospital. So that gave me the real learning of interacting with the patients and real working in the big labs and stuff like this. Then I did my master's from Punjab University.
Okay.
So Punjab University is an old renowned university with an history.
One of the
established
best in Pakistan.
Yeah, established in 1880s. In the master's, my research was on the. So if you see that there is one dilemma in the global dilemma of getting the antibiotic resistant mechanisms. What happened, the microbes, so you know that the infections are caused by the bacteria.
Hmm.
And in order to treat the bacteria, we need the antibiotics. But the problem that bacteria evolve against the antibiotics and they become the superbug. And if we just given excessive antibiotics, that is what happened at least in my country. You know that you can get the antibiotics even
over the counter,
go to the pharmacy. So if you use more antibiotics, there is a mechanism called antibiotic resistance come into the community. So that's a real mechanism, the global mechanism. WHO is working against this as well. So my research was related against that mechanism, how the bacteria become resistant, become the superbug. So I would share one of the findings that it was not a detailed project, it was just a 1-year project. But in my project, I came to know that there's a one bacteria, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA.
Mm.
It got some superbug genes from the bacteria in the pets.
Oh, wow.
So the pet bacteria that is not pathogenic to humans, but it transports some superbug genes to the bacteria and it becomes superbug. So I was just interesting to know about all this thing in my master's at that time.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's a science movie right there.
Yeah.
Very good script.
That's a real problem.
So which pets are we talking about? Like cats, dogs?
That was the dogs that we did some evolutionary studies. So that was a dog actually.
Mm.
So from the dog... So dog has a normal flora, normal bacteria on the skins.
Okay.
Human beings do have the normal flora on the skins as well. But the normal flora of a dog is not going to affect human beings.
Mm.
But it will going to give one of the gene, one of the component to the bacteria of our normal flora.
Oh, wow.
And then our normal flora becomes superbug. And it's really hard to treat them. So imagine... When we have an infection, we went to the hospital and we gave our samples and hospital do some testing and come up with the antibiotics we can give these antibiotics. But imagine if there is a patient and there is no antibiotic against him.
Mm.
So in the patient, that's a dilemma. Even I use the patient and then there is no point and there is no therapy available. So patient will die. You have to see the patient dying
because
there's no therapy available.
So it's just like insulin resistance. You have antibiotic resistance.
Antibiotic resistance bacteria, and they are quite common in the populous countries like Pakistan.
Yeah,
because I
think over there it's very easy to access the antibiotics. So then you moved to New Zealand or
I moved to the Shaukat Khanam Hospital.
Oh, right, the cancer hospital.
The Shaukat Khanam Cancer Hospital, first tertiary based hospital in Pakistan.
Yeah.
And I worked there. I was just after my master's, I want to move to the industry to know how the... To have an understanding of how the labs are working and how the other things are working, how the state-of-art labs are working. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Shaukat Khanam and where I came across the patient with the cancers, actually. So I have seen a lot of patients a lot of young kids that died because of the cancer. And that shaped me again to come to the research. And to do did one of my second masters with the study of acute blood cancer studies. So I did my work in the blood cancers in my research. There was my second research on the blood cancer studies as well. Yeah.
Okay, okay. And then sort of you then transitioned?
Then transitioned to industry again. So I managed one of the 500-bed hospital, biggest hospital. And that was the time of the COVID, actually.
Okay.
And you can imagine what a disastrous time it was. It was a, devastating. So imagine at that time, people were not coming out because of the lockdown.
Yep.
But I have to go daily to the hospital
because we have sort of essential worker.
Essential workers. We have to the essential worker. So my lab was the first lab to start the COVID testing at that time. And it was really hard for me to motivate my staff. So you can imagine that because the first wave of COVID was really potent, and I have seen a lot of death of in the young patients as well. So imagine, and as a lab worker, you have to go to the patient who's already have COVID infection, and you have to take the sample of the COVID infection. So at that time, my staff was not willing to do it. When the pandemic come, people don't know about the COVID. So it was really hard for me to keep motivated my staff, and I have to lead from the front to take the samples of the patient. And that was really a really devastating time. And then, but luckily, we just went through that time.
I think that shows your leadership skills as well. But I think when you work in such a big hospital, the number of patients that you see on daily basis, I think it's the sheer quantity of different cases, or is it mostly the same things that come up?
No, it's we deal with all the modalities actually. So it was a cancer modalities and other stuff there. So. But in, as I just mentioned, the COVID, I will just talk about a little bit more about that COVID time. So it was the one of the challenging time is there was no supplies there as well. So there was no kit supplies. So there was a lot of stuff. So that really helped me to establish my leadership skills and other stuff. And and that helped me to do shift to do MBA as well. I did master's in business.
Look at
business
that. Numbers are coming in.
Again, the number. I was just missing finance and economics for 10 years of my life. Then I shift back to the.
But I think it was, even though you were in medical science, but you were sort of in a people management where you were leading the lab. And I think having an MBA where you practically learn how to take lead in such situations, how to, you know, sort of lead by example. You did well. I was talking to you, and I think one thing that was very interesting in Pakistan, mostly people, you know, are mostly growing up, you know, two countries, England and England and USA. And you had the opportunity to go to USA. But you came to, you know, a mini country at the end of the world.
New Zealand.
What makes you, made you come here?
I got admitted in the Georgia University at that time. But it was in 2018. But then that was a transition phase. I just got married at that time in 2018. So there was a lot of responsibility. I just started a new job in University of Lahore as well. So it's a big job, a lot of demanding job. So I was fully engaged in my life. And I really, my daughter born at that time, So I thought that a transition was a bit difficult, especially to the US where the PhD is actually 5 years at least, five to 7 years. And it was actually under the bond of government as well. So I don't want to go under any bondage because because if you are a researcher, if you are learning the things, you have to be free.
Free of the worries.
Free of the worries,
So
that
was
the things that I just not selected the Georgia University. But then I got admission in Otago University before the COVID. Unfortunately, COVID came. So I could not join the university. And luckily, my wife is also doing PhD. She finish her PhD from Pakistan.
Okay.
But before COVID, we were both looking for opportunities, for PhD opportunities. And we both have an interviewed in University of Otago in the same department.
Oh, wow.
So we were just happy at that time. Yeah, it was easy to go to both of them. We can pursue our PhD. But because of the COVID stuff, obviously the lockdown in New Zealand, so we could not start our PhD. We couldn't start our PhD. So what happened in my, I got admission in microbiology department in University of Otago. And then I did not get the scholarship, unfortunately, in the beginning. Okay. So my supervisor refused me to take a student on a self-finance because it's really hard for self-finance for a student.
And as you said, when you're doing PhD, when you're researching, you should be free from other worries of the world because you need to focus on producing something new in the world.
Yes, yes,
that
yes.
That has an impact.
Yes. And then I realized selected by another supervisor in physiology department. Mm. And then I have a choice of going to the microbiology or to select the physiology. My background is in the microbiology. So I could easily start the microbiology department, but I opted the physiology department. That's different for me. Mm. So I can learn a more thing. So it's always good to challenge yourself to have a more learning there. So I did my physiology and I'm really very, I would love to talk about my work in physiology.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I actually wanted to talk about it. So I think your PhD focuses on stem cells and cardiac organoid. I cannot even pronounce it properly. It sounds incredibly futuristic in my mind. So can you explain your research in simple terms for our listeners and for someone who has who can't even pronounce the words properly. It's something very important happening at the background, happening in New Zealand. We are sort of producing, although we are a small country, but we are producing the cutting edge research, which is going to help the whole world. So can you, explain a bit about it?
So actually, we are working on the cardiovascular diseases. Okay. So cardiovascular diseases is the number one killer in the world, actually.
Okay.
So if you talk about the comorbidities, if we are obese and if we have the diabetes, then it becomes more pronounced effect of cardiovascular diseases. Mm. So, but there is a problem that, so there's a millions of people that have been suffering from cardiovascular diseases, but we need more therapies. But the problem is that we can only test a new drug in the animals.
We need new treatments, new drugs.
But whenever the new drug come, we can't test them directly on
subjects,
the human beings. We can't directly on the human beings. So, but the problem, it wasted billions of money because the animals are different from human beings. Mm. Imagine if I am testing a drug on a mice and if we have to give this drug to the human being. So there is a lot of physiological differences, a lot of species differences, and there is no point of checking a heart drug or brain drug or animal and giving them to the human being. And this is what we have been doing for centuries. Mm. But now FDA is one of the agency who gave us the approval for the new drugs, came up with the stats that 92% of the drugs fail in the clinical trials because of this. They have been tested in the animals.
Different physiology, everything is different.
So we come up with the idea that why can't we make mini hearts? So imagine
in human hearts.
So why can't we make human hearts? So I'm just giving you
the labs.
This is first time. So I'm just really, I want to acknowledge my supervisors, Dr. Rajesh as well, that it's his vision. So we are in the first time in the New Zealand, we are making the mini hearts from the patient specific mini hearts. So imagine, so we collected the blood sample.
Mm.
Similarly, the way you go to the hospital and give the
just
samples,
lab,
just the lab samples, we just take your samples and from the we make stem cells from your blood cells. So stem cell is one of the marvelous cell that can actually transform in any organ of your body, and it will be specific to you. So imagine if we started from my blood.
Mm.
I will just make the stem cell from your blood. And from the stem cell, we can make any organ of your body. We can make heart, we can make liver, we can make brain, we can make anything.
That's
from
so
that
impressive.
Cell. That was really so marvelous. So this work was done by one of the Nobel laureate, Dr. Yamanaki in Japan.
Hmm.
So he proposed this idea. So this was an extension of the time. You might have reminded of the Dolly, the clone sheep, actually.
Yep, Dolly,
it was in late 90s. they come up with the, they just clone the Dolly. And that time there was a lot of sci-fi movies on the clonings and other stuff, what the people are doing. So they made, similarly at that time, Dr. Yamanaki was also working on all these things. And so they come up with how we can just make any cell of your body to the stem cell. So we are also doing the same stuff. And we are the first one in the New Zealand to make mini hearts.
So for stem cells, are they the basic building blocks of anything?
They are the basic. They are like the zygote when there is a fertilization between mother and the mother and father. Mm. So sperm from the father and the egg from the mother, they fertilize and they give up the one cell which we call a zygote.
Okay.
So stem cell is like that cell.
Okay.
So from the one zygote, the whole organism come into being.
Okay.
So similarly, that stem cell is that much potent, then we can make the whole organism, theoretically. But till now, we are just making the heart and other liver and brain cells.
You make it seem so easy, but I'm...
No, it's so hard. I can't tell you it's so hard. For moving from the blood cell to the stem cell, I can't... So moving from the blood cell to the stem cell... It's the hardest thing, I'm telling you. We do have the kits available, but executing these things, I have to work overnights. It was sometime I have to do some. So it take 2 or 3 months for me. And as I just mentioned you, it was just only few of the groups are doing in the world in this thing. So it was really something fabulous. So imagine, the problem was that we can't test the drugs on the animals. So this is where we got the. We got the organs from the human. So first of all, we get rid of the problem of the animals. So we are in the humans actually. And secondly, it's personalized.
Oh, yeah.
So if I'm Arib, I want some drug. So I will go to the lab, I will give my blood, they will make my heart and they will test the specific drug to my heart. And then we can just have a lot of patients have the allergies with the drug and insensitivities and other stuff. So we can get rid of that thing as well.
Yeah. And I think I was reading a research that probably South Asians have a higher tendency, even if their body mass index is very good, they are exercising, but just because of the genetics, the way they are, they have a high tendency of getting insulin resistance or heart disease. So I think what you're saying is if it is personalized to every person, it eliminates that, you know, generic formula that, hey, this is generic. It might work on Kiwis, New Zealand Europeans, but might not work on South Asians or anyone.
Yeah.
But because it's not personalized, the drugs will be sort of one-to-one for the exact person, right person. That's so fascinating.
It's really so fascinating. That's why I was just giving you the reference of FDA, Federal Drug Authority. They pass a legislation in the U.S. Congress.
Okay.
About all this stuff that new drugs should not be testing on animals. They have to be testing on these new models. So, we can test different drugs and it will going to differentiate between different ethnic groups and different person-to-person differences. And moreover, there is another potential of this strategy. It can be a regeneration. May not be in the near future, but maybe in a long future, we can make a full heart and we can transplant the heart. Mm-hmm. Because this is one of the bigger problems, the transplantation. We always have less donors available. Mm-hmm. We need a kidney transplantation, liver transplantation, heart transplantation, but we don't have a donor. That's a global problem.
Yeah.
And so if we can imagine from a blood cell, I can make a big heart of a patient and then we can just transplant the heart to the patient. That would be next level. That would be next
just
level.
Like, I always had a question in my mind. Starfish, if you cut one of their,
regenerate. Yeah, you're right, actually.
So you know, humans, I mean, what you're doing is can be translated to humans. That's
amazing.
So what, if anyone who's interested in this one.
Yeah.
Or any young listener who's listening to Arib, who's a scientist, who's working on producing an artificial heart, and that heart is starting from your own blood and becomes a part of it. a part of your body, can become a part of your body, yeah. potentially can become, I yeah. would say. What suggestion would you give to that young Kiwi
yeah.
who listens to you and who gets inspiration from you?
So at what platform?
Yeah, I mean, how do they start? Where do they start? Do yeah. they have to be curious? Do they have to be thinking about science all the time? Or
it's just a punchline is sufficient to create curiosity and something wow. As I just mentioned you, the last 3 years back when I came and landed in Dunedin, I met my supervisor, and my supervisor said to me, would you be happy to work on a project on making the blood cell to the stem cell? Mm. So that's just the thing, that one thing come from my mind is wow. Mm. So that's a wow thing. So you can imagine. So yeah, as you mentioned, I'm just making, I'm simplifying it. It's not easy to make the stem cell, but it's a lot of potential. So if anybody interested in working in sports, medicine, or in working in, sometime you might understand, you might be interested to know how the digestion work, how the intestine work, how the diabetes work, how everything work. So if you want to work on any organ, you can start with the stem cell.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can start. As I just mentioned, we are the first one in New Zealand.
Okay.
To make these heart that are patient specific.
Mm.
Yeah. So we a lot of groups are collaborating with our group to understand the things.
So when you say heart, I know there is a science behind it. So when you have a stem cell, it sort of regenerates, or you have already heart. You have real hearts, or it's in computer system which we are.
No, it's a real heart. It's a mini heart.
Oh wow!
So it's a mini heart from the blood cell we make these stem cell, and from the stem cell we. That's how actually embryo grow, as we just discussed from the zygote, embryo heart grow. Similarly, we treat the stem cell with different nutrients and different growth factors, and then it will become the heart. And imagine that heart actually beats.
Oh, wow.
So I can show you some awesome videos where the heart actually beats like a human beat, and it contains almost all the cells. All this death is actually present in the adult cell. And what we are doing other than this thing, we are actually making this heart the disease heart.
Okay.
So if we have the heart, if somebody have the myocardial infarction, so we are just making this heart the myocardial heart. And then we are checking the drugs that are against the myocardial. So these are the real heart actually, and they really beat actually. Really the wow moment. I can't tell you, the heart is beating.
It literally looks like you are sort of Tony Stark who's working in a lab and you know, he has Jarvis on his side, and Jarvis do this, Jarvis do that. So does in your work, does AI help a bit, or is AI has not infiltrated yet in your
AI in terms of automation? We can say that if we want to go to the next level, it's just an automation, because I have to spend a lot of time in a lab, I have to do a lot of pipetting and maybe the hours of pipetting and other stuff. So it's a manual work that is more. So the next level, we can have some automation. We can involve some automation in there. But for a direct AI intervention, so in a lab works, it's always the more human works that are required. But AI is also helpful. Yeah. No doubt helpful.
So
sometimes you have a lot of ideas. You have to screen your ideas.
Yeah.
It's an helpful, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of running? Because I'm sure before making heart, the real heart, there would be, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you make it at the first try, first go, or did you had to take a couple of goes before you could?
Automation. We need an optimizations of different things. Yeah.
Do you reckon AI would sort of help in running simulations of your results and tell, hey, you know, in finance, we have sort of Monte Carlo simulations where we have certain scenarios running in, and then we end up without going into every scenario.
Yeah,
we get a result. Hey, if I ran 10,000 different scenarios, and out of those 10,000 different scenarios, there are five ones are the best ones.
Yeah.
So do you reckon AI would help you? In the-
No doubt. We can have a suggestion, or we can downsize our thought processing, but still the lab work is quite different, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just, you have to see it practically. Mm. So it's obviously helpful. But still, I would give 7% to the manual work, 70% to 70%, the manual work, 70% for the manual work. So yeah, it's actually fabulous. And hopefully we will be able to make, and the world will make the regeneration hard and other stuff like this. So it will going to save billions of dollars.
Yeah. And do you reckon in our lifetime we would be able to see the transplant, or is it?
Hopefully.
Or is it beyond, I'm not sure, beyond what's the time frame that you're looking at? 2050,
30, 40? Yeah, it's actually what happened, sometime the groundbreaking research came.
Mm.
And then it's changed all the paradigm or all the shape of the research. As I just mentioned you, the research of Yamanaki, he's a Nobel laureate. So he know how to, he proposed how we can make the stem cell. So it shifts all the paradigm. Mm. But I need it, it will take at least 2 decades.
At least 2 decades.
At least 2 decades, I think so. But but nobody knows how nobody the world knows. Is evolving and how AI is helping.
Yeah. and your research, how quickly we can see that coming to fruition?
It would be maybe a few years, even less than that. Mm. Because we are in our lab, we just made the heart, we made these mini hearts, and we test them, and we make them the disease models. So we were successfully make them disease model, and we tested different drugs on that disease model as well, and they are acting like a human heart. So the thing is, we are going in a good direction and at a good pace. So hopefully we will get that. And you can the other thing about these mini hearts, that they are actually the miniatures of the main adult heart. So if somebody has some mutations, as you just mentioned, that in our region in Pakistan and in Southeast Asians, they do have a more tendency to get diabetic or heart disease because of their genes and mutations. And whenever we make these mini hearts, these mini hearts contains the same mutation as from the person we are making it. So that's a good thing that we can have we have the same mutation. So this really helped in few of the genetically diseased patients. So I will just name one of the genetic disease. We just have 10 families in whole New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously can't test them, but we can have their blood sample and we can make their mini hearts to test them. So always helpful working with the unique diseases and working with the more prevalent diseases.
Yes, it's good. It's quite fascinating. And think of university, because I'm from finance and economics background.
Mm-hmm.
So my life is all numbers, but when I look at the work you're doing, it's so amazing that in New Zealand we are making hearts out of blood.
Out of the blood samples, yeah.
You know, who would have imagined?
No.
All right.
And imagine if we're going to save billions of money to New Zealand as well. Actually.
Yes.
A lot of money, not billions, but a lot of costing money.
My final question would be, if a Pakistani young student is listening today and dreaming of becoming a scientist, what message would you leave them with? If somebody wants to come to New Zealand for this research?
So I will going to highlight another important aspect that I was a medical lab scientist in Pakistan. So the guys that are medical lab scientists in Pakistan or anywhere in the world, they can come here on medical lab scientists as well.
Mm.
And they can apply for registration in New Zealand and they get the registration and they can practice as medical lab scientists in New Zealand as well. So I got a registration from in New Zealand. And that's the one thing. And secondly, the best thing is what's your research interest? and then just approach the professor. And usually professors do have a fundings and other stuff, and then approach them and just write to them about their achievements. And yeah, and I will not going to finish the talk before acknowledging my wife, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I want to, yeah.
Yes. That's the most important thing.
My family, actually, yeah. And my wife has always supported me, and I would actually would have never achieved these things without the support of my wife and my family. And she always stand by me, encourage me, help me, and stay focused so I can stay focused on my goals. And especially my kids, my son and my daughter, Mirha and Basil. So there is they actually the source of joy for me, actually. And yep. So whenever I spend a lot of hours in the lab and I was stressed, and then when I go home, it becomes just happiness for me, actually. Yeah,
it's good to have. I know your wife, Komal, is also, she's also a scientist. And actually, I am in talks with her, and she's also coming to our show.
That would be great,
and we are also going to discuss her, her thesis, what she did,
what
she's doing, and you know, and as always, she's the better half of you.
We'll
have more than this one. Two scientists in the same house.
So that's a good combo, actually. Scientists should marry the scientist. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. You can't spend hours in the lab.
All right. Thanks, Ari. We'll probably sit again because your research is so fascinating.
Yeah,
and one sitting was too small for it. And I think we need to explore a bit more of it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks again for just inviting me. I'm just so thank you for you. See ya.
Thanks for spending your time with us on Chit Chat with Pao.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with more voices, stories, and fun.
Until then, Allah Hafiz and Kia ora.
This was Chit Chat with Pao,
where community connects.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.